Hi, and welcome to the radio version of DC Public Safety. I'm your host, Len Sipes. At our microphones today is Guy Charity. Guy is the secretary of the Daniel A. Payne Reclamation Program, and that is a program, faith-based program, dealing with the provision of services to former offenders. We have two people currently under the supervision of my agency, the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency, and we'll simply know them as Larry and Michael. So to Guy, Larry, and Michael, welcome to DC Public Safety.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
All right, Guy, the first question goes to you. Now, the Daniel A. Payne Reclamation Program, first of all, describe what that is very briefly, and let's get on to the broader topic of assisting people who are coming out of the prison system, please.
Yeah, the Daniel A. Payne Reclamation Program is a 501c3 program that is sponsored by Metropolitan AME Church that is designed to help ex-offenders returning back to the community by strengthening their family, spiritual, and economic well-being.
Okay. Now, that is laudable, and let's get right into the questions in terms of the different people listening to this program. They're going to say, okay, well, should the church be involved in dealing with ex-offenders? Doesn't the church or the mosque or the synagogue have elderly people to deal with, or poverty, or about 1,000 other issues that the church should be focusing on? Why is the church dealing with former offenders?
I think the church is most especially interested in doing this, in that they have the resources and they have the commitment to make things like this happen. The Metropolitan AME Church is located in downtown D.C., so it has an urban ministry. And so we have the ability to reach out into the community and provide these types of services.
Okay. So everybody in the church is on board?
Yes.
And everybody is supportive of the concept of dealing with ex-offenders?
Yes, very much so.
Okay. I mean, you see the difficulty with, I've been working with offenders for decades, and they tell me they come out of the prison system and nobody wants to give them any time at all, or for that matter, the churches. They've said the churches have not been supportive. They go and try to get employment. They go and try to get services, and it's like, man, you've been in prison. I'm sorry. You know, I got a whole waiting list of more worthy people standing in front of you. So there's always been that barrier. And I've heard from people in the past that the churches and maybe the mosques and the synagogues are also part of that barrier. But in your case, it's not.
No, I think you have to educate yourself, and you have to educate your congregation. Once the congregation knows and people know that it's not that bad and that there is results, positive results that can be had from taking steps into addressing the needs of this target population, is very rewarding. So okay. It's a matter of just educate. If you educate your congregation, if you educate the community, and they see that it's not really that bad, and that positive results can result from efforts taken, I think they'd be more willing to step out.
All right. So to get around to the larger issue of people coming out of the prison system, you and I had a discussion one time out when we were doing fugitive safe surrender, and people were voluntarily turning themselves in with warrants. And you and I were having this discussion outside of the church. And we just basically agreed that this is a difficult area, that I've worked in the area, I've had hands-on experience in working in the area, and it is really difficult to see so many young men, and in some cases women, almost purposefully throw their lives away in terms of crime and drugs, even if they come out and get a second chance. Sometimes it's a daunting situation trying to convince them that there is a life outside of that heroin needle. There is a life outside of being on the street, hustling, being in part of the game. That it's difficult. It's not the easiest thing in the world to do.
Yeah, it's all about choices. And unfortunately, if you make a bad choice, it takes time to recover from them. But we in the church community, in the faith-based community, we understand that it's about choices, and we extend that you can be forgiven, and we understand that you can have a second, a third, and a fourth chance.
Mm-hmm. All right. Who wants to go first, Larry or Michael? Somebody raise their hand, because I've got questions for you. Okay, so you are Larry.
Mike.
Michael, I'm sorry, I screwed that up. Michael, tell me. Now, you're currently under our supervision, and you are a client over at the Daniel A. Payne Reclamation Program, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Can I ask you why you're under supervision?
Well, I was under supervision for marijuana possession with intent to distribute.
Okay. And you've done either recently or somewhere in your history, you've been incarcerated.
Yes.
All right. So you're out on the street. How's things going for you?
Well, things are going fine. I've been employed by the Daniel A. Payne Reclamation Program. I've been given a mentor who's got charity right here sitting beside me. And it's been a good experience in the program. It initially, when I first got in the program, it gave me a lot of hope for the future. And that was important. And being in the summer program that they had at the time was very good. It gave me something to do every day. Life skills taught me a lot of things.
All right, how long you been out?
I would say February of 06.
Okay, so you've been out in the street for a while.
Mm-hmm.
All right, are you successful?
Yes, I would say. I feel like I'm more successful now than I ever was because of the position that I have with the Daniel A. Payne Reclamation Program.
What do you do?
I'm an administrative assistant for the program. And, you know, I work hands-on with a lot of ex-offenders.
All right.
It's very rewarding.
So it's not only are you getting mentorship from the Daniel A. Payne Reclamation Center, you also have a job.
Yes.
All right. So what is the key ingredient in terms of taking people who come out of the prison system or come out of jails, and what's the key in terms of turning them around? Because the statistics are not very encouraging. According to the Department of Justice, 2/3 are rearrested within 3 years and 50% are reincarcerated within 3 years.
Well, the reason that it's probably not successful is because just the act of probation is more inclined to have you reincarcerated.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you weren't on probation, you wouldn't get locked up for missing a meeting with a probation officer or failing a drug test. So you really, probation is going to get you locked up. You know, it's you got really 1 foot back in jail anyway. But programs like the Daniel A. Payne Reclamation Program, they kind of offset that in a way because they give, you know, young men some hope and something to do, because a lot of young men, this isn't their first time in the system, you know? And so, I mean,
how old are you?
I'm 20. I just turned 30 yesterday.
Congratulations. Yesterday was my happy birthday.
Yeah. So it's like the program teaches you life skills. It gets you on the right path. And plus, you know, you have a congregation behind you, a lot of people behind you, a lot of resources.
I've heard that so often. A lot of people come out of the prison system. A lot of people come out of the prison system and they're not well connected to either their family, and the friends may not be the best of friends to go back to. And a lot of times I'm told that the religious organizations that are part of this network, that's a really important thing, that not necessarily the religion. We're not asking people to become Baptists. We're not asking people to become Muslims. But just having people surround you and take care of you and discuss things with you and support you and take you to job interviews or to do whatever, supply you with a set of clothes for the job interview. Evidently, that seems to be important in a lot of people's lives.
Yes, because a lot of people weren't raised up around that type of environment where you have an uncle who's a lawyer, you know, aunt who works down at the court building,
mm-hmm.
where you can have things, the system can work for you. You got people who can pull strings for you.
Okay.
And you know what I mean? So when you enter a program like the Daniel A. Payne Reclamation Program, you get in the whole Metropolitan AME Church behind you.
Right.
Whereas whatever resource you need, it's someone in that church, since the whole church is on board with the program.
Right.
And they're not looking down on you like you're a sinner, because the whole basic thing of church is forgiveness.
Right, it is forgiveness.
That's what church is about.
Right.
You know, so I mean, when the church signs on and everybody's on board, it's like you have a whole network of people behind you, and you can, and strings can be pulled for you that might not have been able to be pulled for you in the past. So it's really like you come from being a second class citizen to maybe like a middle to upper class citizen as far as your connections.
Because you have, you're surrounded by people who are, you know, pro-social people who are not involved in crime, not involved in drugs, and they're embracing you and they're helping you take you from point A to point B.
Yeah, you're meeting people where you wouldn't have met
right
in the past.
Understood.
And you're interacting with people and you're seeing that these people have made the right decisions. They haven't had to dabble in the street life right. or in the drug culture.
But both of us know that an awful lot of people that come out of the prison system go back to the criminal justice system. Now, I want to get back to your point a little while ago. When you said, you know, the probation system all like sort of set you up for a failure, the average person would say, but, you know, aren't you obligated not to do drugs? Aren't you obligated to show up to your parole and probation officer's place on time, that these are things that if you're out of the prison system, these are things we want you to do. So how does that set you up?
Well, like, I can answer that in two ways, because you're exactly right. You do owe your debt to society, which is part your prison sentence, and the other part is your probation when you hit the streets or halfway house, whatever you have to do.
Right.
So that is true. At the same time, you expected to live a life and pay bills. And if you're not in a halfway house, you expected to live somewhere. You expected to feed yourself. You expected to do a lot of things. And when you expect to do those things, you might have a lot of obligations. You might have a drug program at 6:30 that day. You might got to meet your PO at 2. You might, you know, have to go to a program like, say, for instance, you in the Daniel A. Payne Reclamation Program. You're in there during the middle of the day. Your day is filled up, and really, where's the money coming from? So there you go. You need money. So that might be one reason why, if you're looking for a job, or you have a job, or you have a way you can get money, it kind of conflicts with those things, and you're bound to miss some things like that. But I do say that the probation officers here that I've had in the District of Columbia have been understanding. I'm not going to say they've been to the point where they just have no understanding of what you're going through, because, you know, they are from the community too. They probably have an uncle or nephew that's on probation. They understand what you're going through.
But feel free to criticize us.
No.
I mean, you get to say whatever it is that you want to say. I mean, I'm interested in hearing the reality of the situation, and I'm glad that you're finding the CSOs, what we call community supervision officers. Most in jurisdictions around the country, they call them parole and probation agents. I'm glad that you're finding them helpful. Okay, so let me just ask a couple more questions, and then we're going to get around to asking the same questions from Larry, or some similar questions to Larry. Okay, so we both know that there's a lot of people that come out and don't do well. We know there's a lot of people that come back out, get back involved in lifestyle, back involved in the game, back involved in drugs, back involved in crime, and they go back to prison. So what's the difference between you and them?
Well, there really is no difference, because the thing about it is we've all made the same choices in the past, and the only difference between me and them is that, I mean, it's the same difference between me and a pastor at a church or someone in the congregation at a church. I might have gotten caught. The person in that church who's sitting in the front row yelling and screaming every Sunday,
mm-hmm.
they might not have gotten caught.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why dealing with the church is good, because it's all about forgiveness. We all do things, you know what I mean? So
to everybody else who is listening to this program, who basically says, look, my man, you didn't serve time. You know, what do you want from me? You know, why are you even out? You should be in prison. We both know that those people exist.
Well,
and maybe there's more than just a couple people with that attitude. What do you say to them?
Well, those people, I mean, I can understand why they feel that way. They probably, most of them probably Republicans, you know. So
oh, don't kid yourself.
I'm just joking. But
I think across the board, upper
I'm just
income,
joking.
Lower income, yeah, white, joking. Black. Yeah, yeah. I've heard this over and over and over again.
I'm just joking, but nah,
keep
seriously.
Keep them in prison.
Seriously, but I mean, I can understand that, because if I had a family and a wife and kids, I wouldn't want some guy coming home from jail living next door to me,
because
that's the perception that you have of people who return home. But
right.
The thing is, if you look at it as all the stuff that you've done in your life, and you really know that you've done, and you've never been caught for.
All right.
But they're, like
but they're going to
we're no different from you.
They're going to say, yeah, I cheated on my income taxes. Yeah, I drove while intoxicated. Yeah, I hit somebody when I should have. But I haven't raped. I haven't robbed. I haven't murdered anybody.
Okay, that's true. I neither have I, for the record, but
okay. Not suggesting that you have, but you know, this is how people feel. People are saying, I've done that. I've done things I could go to prison for, but I haven't done these really extreme things that we keep hearing about every night on the evening news.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that, and to speak on violent offenders and people who commit crimes, heinous crimes, a lot of those people pay their debt to society, and when they come out, I mean, it's like, say you do 20 years, 10 years, I mean, you become institutionalized, and jail may be your home, and you might want to go back there, too, because that's home. I mean, some of that stuff is dealing with issues that, you know, we could go talk for hours about those issues, but as far as what I would say to somebody who doesn't understand why these people should be let back into the community, I would just say, this community is made up of different people, and this is home for people. If a person kills somebody and they go do their time and they come back, where are they going to go? So you better make this, the transition back into society as smooth as possible, because they not going to Richmond. They not going to Baltimore. If they kill somebody in D.C. in 1980 and they just come home, they coming back to D.C. So you need to make D.C. a place where they can receive the type of programs and benefits that can make them a productive citizen in D.C. because eventually D.C. is going to be the place where they commit their next murder if they don't have these type of programs.
Okay, and the research does indicate that these programs, when I say these programs, mental health programs, educational programs, GED programs, job programs, the people who are involved in these programs, generally speaking, have a substantially less rate of recidivism. In other words, it's a lot less of the times they're going out and knocking somebody over top the head. And they're being taxpayers instead of tax burdens. And so these programs do seem to work, but it's just a little, it's always for those of us who are involved on this end of the criminal justice system, that these programs work, but if they work, how come we don't have a groundswell of support in terms of more of these programs? That's always puzzled me. But it is now Larry's turn, and Larry, you're the one up next, and you're the one who I want to sort of go through the same conversation with, and then we're going to go back to the guy to end it up. Now, you're currently under supervision of my agency, the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency, correct?
Yes.
Can you give me a sense as to why you're under supervision?
I'm under supervision. I committed a crime when I was young. I was like 19 when I committed a crime. I happened to help someone get away after they committed a crime. That's actually my case.
Okay.
Helping someone get away after they committed a crime, accessory after the fact.
All right. And you've done time?
Yes, I have.
All right. So you're out. How long you been out?
I've been out now 13 months.
And how's it? What's it been like?
It's been rough in the beginning, but I'm sticking through it, holding on now. I'm working, and I go to school during the day.
Okay. Now, let's get back to the part of being rough. A lot of people, they come out of prison, and they're not prepared for what it is they're coming out to. And a lot of people tell me that you have the elation, the family picks you up, and everybody gets together for a nice meal, and everybody is happy that you're home, and it's, you know, nice for a couple days. But suddenly, you got to find a job. Suddenly, you got to find a place to live. And even though the family has welcomed you home with open arms, they may not necessarily want you to live with them. So a lot of the guys that I've talked to, it's a rough transformation. They're not mentally, psychologically prepared for, you know, those days after everybody welcomes them home. It's rough, and I want you to talk about that.
Yes, it is rough a lot. For one, when a person come home from jail, he's he or she's obligated to bills. The world doesn't stop because you got popped. When you inside, the life still's going, your family still pays bill. So when you come home, you have to help and support. And it's hard coming straight out of prison because you has no job. You coming straight from scratch like a newborn baby.
Mm-hmm. Now, what would happen, by the way, if you had these programs in the prison system? I mean, you know, I every warden I've ever talked to, it doesn't matter whether it's the federal system or the state system, every warden I've ever talked to basically supports the following proposition, that everybody in prison should get their GED, everybody in prison should get drug treatment, everybody in prison should have a job training program, and everybody in prison should have mental health treatment. And all that stuff should be continued when they get back out to the community. Now, every warden says this, but the research tells me that the national research is that the overwhelming majority of folks leaving the prison system aren't getting these services. Or in while they're in the prison system, they don't get these services. Now, why is that?
It's that because it takes for so long for the program to get set up. The time that individual like myself will be able to get in, would like to get in one of the programs, and by then it might be a waiting list. I might not have enough time. I might have to have a certain criteria of time, jail time to do. I might be shorter than that, or I might be longer than that. If since I'm not coming home for the next couple of years, they might put me on the back burner for them people that is short and put them first, you know, and that's how that goes on.
All right. But is it, I guess this is what I'm trying to get out of you, Larry. In your opinion, is this a sense that, I mean, we build jail beds, prison beds by the leaps and bounds. And by the way, just for the record, I'm not against that. If you do the crime, you do the time. And I'm not quite sure you agree or disagree with me on that. But there are certain people who need to be incarcerated and certain people who need to be punished. But as long as they're in the prison system, they should get the services they're going to need so they don't continue to commit crimes when they get out. I mean, that's my own editorializing. And I've always wondered, okay, why is this? We build prison beds by the tens of thousands every year, but we don't build these programs that folks need while they're in the prison system. And why is that, in your opinion?
I really don't know for real why that. You had to ask someone that's, like, you know, in charge of doing the programs. You know, when I was where I just come from, I come from a prison that's really strictly for all DC inmates, you know. So mm-hmm. where I was just at, we had programs.
But that was a federal prison, just it for was, people listening outside of the District of Columbia.
It was a federal prison.
All D.C. offenders now go to federal prisons.
Yeah, they all go to a federal
the people
prison.
Beyond the limits of the District of Columbia.
Yeah, and I was in a prison for North Carolina. In this particular prison, it was a private owned, but we was funded by the Bureau of Prison.
Right.
So everybody down there is from D.C. or they was an immigrant.
All right.
And that prison, majority of people who go to jail,
Rivers,
that's the name of it. They do have a lot of programs there. When I went to Rivers, I got in keyboard nerdy type of keyboard and word processing all the way to Microsoft Excel and PowerPoint. I did all that. I even got a we even went to college. We went to they had a community college, Roanoke Child and Community College. I went there for a year, got my heating and air conditioning certification, my CFC. I went to a little 30-day drug programs here and there, a little life skills. They do have a lot of programs there for you, but you have to be, you've got to be able to get in them yourself.
Right. You got to have the mindset that you want to go in and pick up these things and run with them. Now, how are you doing on the outside?
I'm on outside. I'm doing swell. In the David Alexander program and I'm in a program located in Willow Creek, the Old Valley Green. I'm in a pre-apprenticeship doing construction industry there now.
Okay. So you're using those skills that you picked up in the prison system?
Yeah, I'm trying to. When in the prison system, it was all books. It was no hands-on.
Right.
We couldn't get equipment and things like that. So I really just got the book smart, but that's not what I need to get a job in that field. I need some type of training. So that's what I'm in Willow Creek right now for.
Larry, tell me, what do people need when they come out of the prison system? They hear from me. They hear from Guy. They hear from the President of the United States, who in his State of the Union speech back in 2004 talked about the necessity for these sorts of programs, specifically faith-based programs. You hear from advocates, and you hear from lots of people who simply say, hey, I'm sorry, we got the elderly to deal with. We've got schools to improve. We've got kids who are sick and don't get medical care. I'm sorry, I got too much on my mind to deal with people coming out of the prison system. system. I got all these other things going on, and I just don't have a lot of time, nor do I have a lot of sympathy for people who come out of the prison system. So you represent those 650,000 people coming out of prisons every year back into the community. So can you imagine that? You came in here today representing one person, and today you're representing 650,000. What do you say to people to convince them that you're worth investing in?
You have to always give people a chance. Everybody's not as bad as what it say on paperwork. Like in my instance, on paperwork, you'll say that I'm a very violent person. I'm being stole my criminal background, my case that I have, but I'm not that way at all. People need a chance. That's all we need is a chance to make it. You know, it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be, you know, as soon as we get out, we're going to do the right thing. It takes time. Some people have to change their whole lifestyle, their whole character, not just their lifestyle, their character. You know, some people just grew up just in the corrupt environment, and it takes time to change. Change takes time.
All right. Guy, we're going to go back to you for the last 5 minutes of the program. Now, we've heard from Larry and we've heard from Michael, and we've heard two individuals who have been incarcerated. They're now out. They're now drug free. They're now employed or getting training. They're now either taxpayers or about to be taxpayers instead of tax burdens. Are these the rare few individuals, or if the services were there across the board for people coming out of the prison system, would they be part of the mainstream of offenders coming out of the prison system, or are these just hand-picked, cherry-picked guys who are doing well? What do you think would happen if we had all these programs that we feel are in society's best interest?
I think this is the rule and not the exception. These guys are doing well. We didn't cherry-pick them. I think they wanted to change, and we provided them the opportunity. As with our program, there's a learning curve. When we first started out, we stumbled around. We didn't exactly know what we were doing, but we put one foot in front of the other, and we just went out in faith. We made our mistakes, and for instance, when we first started the program, we had committed to providing jobs. We didn't know how we were going to do it, but when we started, we said we want to provide one of the cornerstones of our program is going to be jobs. We're going to promise you a job.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't know where it was coming from, but we made that promise. So the guys came into the program and said, okay, he said he's going to get me a job.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the program progressed along, we said, okay, now we got to get these jobs. Now, where are they going to come from? So I actually stood up at a blackboard with our board members, and we actually crafted a plan to provide jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So we did. So we actually found jobs. So the first job that we found, we sent one of our program graduates to, it was a restaurant. The guy said, you send him here. We need help right now. You send him, he's hired. If he shows up, he's hired.
Right.
And so we're excited. I'm excited. I'm like, wow, our first job. We got somebody a job.
Yep.
So we send him to the place. He looks at the outside of the building, and he says, I don't want to work here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I call. So I'm thinking that that's a done deal, and we can move on. I find out he never even showed up, never went to the appointment. So you have those types of disappointments. But we took that into consideration. We changed, worked with the program, calibrated it, and figured out, well, we got to ask these guys what they want.
Right.
He didn't want restaurants, so we should have known that, so we shouldn't have sent them there. So we had to make these types of corrections. We had to deal with these types of disappointments and frustrations. But it's a growing process, and I think we've learned from it, and we have been able to do what we said we were going to do.
Yeah, it's never been easy. I did one time a little over a year of street counseling on the streets of the city of Baltimore working with gangs. No structure. You were just out there at night with these guys, and these guys could be a little rough and tough. And I was just, you know, it's heartbreaking seeing so many young men who are so willing to toss their lives away. But you know, somebody told me one time that said, just be ready for me, Mr. Sipes. He said, you know, when we're ready for you, you've got to be ready for us. Because if you're ready for us, if you're in a position to help, there's a whole mess of people, maybe even the majority, who will walk over, cross that bridge to being taxpayers instead of tax burdens. And I always thought that that was a unique perspective.
And I think we discussed this in our previous discussions that We got to catch them before they turn 40 and sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Oh, absolutely. Somehow, I want the 25-year-olds. I want the 22-year-olds. I want the 17-year-olds, because that's exactly that age. Mm. You know, you get to 35 and you're sick and tired of being sick and tired. I want to reach him when he's 15. That's a wonderful show. We are bring Larry and Michael back in the future and let them tell us how to reach them when they're 16. Ladies and gentlemen, this is DC Public Safety. Our guests today have been Guy Charity, the secretary of the Daniel A. Payne Reclamation Center, and two people who he is assisting, Michael and Larry. Thanks, guys, for coming in today. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening. Look for us at our website, which is www.csosa.gov. Have yourselves a very pleasant day. We'll be right back.